With a decision on the way from Washington about the Iran nuclear deal, a reminder that the Trump administration has more options than simply in or out. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. If the Trump administration were to pull back from the Iran nuclear deal today, this might restore sanctions on Iran that could mean less Iranian oil on the market. Yet the price of crude oil is down sharply in New York trading this morning, down 1.2% and back below $70 a barrel. Oil traders, we should remind ourselves, are not all-knowing, but it's possible the Trump team today could nuance its posture, and Europe is a big part of this. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, is following this from London. Hi, Anu.
Hi, David.
We'll see what happens today, but if the U.S. pulls back from this agreement, what's next?
Well, the first thing it triggers is sanctions against Iranian oil exports. Now, that affects countries like China, India, and Japan, which buy most of the Iranian oil, not so much Europe. The wider question is how far President Trump is prepared to go in punishing countries that are doing business with Iran. Germany's trade is worth about $4 billion. French exports to Iran increased by something like 120% last year. And you've got all kinds of other countries. Italy, Austria, Spain, they've been seeing bigger increases in trade. In fact, the EU as a whole is Iran's third largest trading partner. So they've got a lot to lose today. And they are definitely watching what President Trump has to say.
But nuance this further, because the U.S. can do what it wants to do, but Europe doesn't have to pull out of this.
If he takes the softer route and says, we're not going to waive the sanctions again, but we're not really going to punish people who do business with Iran, if he leaves that wiggle room, then yes, obviously Europe can continue trading. And in fact, French officials have been telling French companies, carry on. But if he goes in harder, if he actually sticks to his campaign promises and says, no, we're really going to inflict economic pain on Iran, then he does have to punish the companies that are trading with Iran.
Which prompts the question, how might Europe respond?
How they respond really depends on the terms that President Trump spells out. Because remember that while Iranian trade is important to these European countries, the U.S. is still the biggest market in the world. And if President Trump says, well, if you're going to do business with Iran, you lose access to America's market, then that's a much trickier situation for European allies to negotiate. So it really does depend on what we hear today.
My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand in London. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
Anu's early Global Marketplace Morning Report is part of our podcast feed each morning if you miss it on the air. And now a teachable moment about the markets in 2018 that starts with my Captain Kirk Star Trek pajamas. Well, say I wanted to sell my pajamas by putting up a sign on my lonely street. It's unlikely I'd find too many potential buyers. That is an illiquid market. But say I try to sell my Captain Kirk pajamas at a Star Trek convention. Lots of potential buyers, easy to buy and sell. That is what we call a liquid market, and maybe I'd get a decent price. Well, there is concern right now in May of 2018 that there is a liquidity problem in some real financial markets, including some bonds. You go to sell and no one's interested, or you accept a stupid price because the loan buyer drives a hard bargain. To help with this liquidity question, let's bring in Jeffrey Cleveland, the chief economist at Payden and Riegel in Los Angeles.
One of the ways we're thinking about it is just the structure of the financial markets and looking at what's changed over time. And there's an important piece to the structure of financial market, which are the intermediaries, the third parties.
All right. This is the, you know, middle men and middle women who may not have a strong view about whether or not they want to hold that particular set of corporate bonds or something or sell them. It's that if you want to sell them, they will buy pretty quickly and then sell them to someone else. You're getting the sense, or you've seen data that suggests that they're not really holding as much of these financial instruments?
Well, we know, for example, that in the corporate bond market, the non-financial corporate bond market, total debt outstanding or total bonds in circulation has more than doubled since the crisis, so since 2008. But the inventory, so I would classify that as what's on the shelves in terms of the bond market, supermarket. That would be the dealer inventories. Those have declined pretty noticeably. They, in terms of being that circuit breaker, being that shock absorber when lots of sellers appear, they're less willing or less able to do that.
Now, when some markets are less liquid than they once were, I mean, maybe who cares day to day, but if a crunch is in the offing and you're looking for someone to buy these wretched securities you're trying to offload, that's where you could have a problem.
We've had maybe three instances in the last 4 or 5 years where you can get a hint of what we're talking about here, David. Lots of sellers showed up, and perhaps there wasn't the shock absorber in between. And what you have happened there in those liquidity scenarios is that prices move. Prices move dramatically. So it's not that trades don't get done, it's that they get done at different prices. And I think that ties the knot nicely into other things that we've been talking about a lot in the financial markets, namely volatility. So you have a liquidity event that moves prices, and that causes volatility.
Something for policymakers, something for market players and other interested parties to consider. Jeffrey Cleveland, chief economist at Payden & Riegel in Los Angeles. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
By the way, I am not selling my Captain Kirk Star Trek pajamas, no matter how robust the market. The pajamas are mine. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin. I am David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.